Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Shizzy!
No, that's Matthew Sosi.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Sosi.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Sosi. The show is available as a podcast, and it's also available on iTunes. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is the Film Geeks Final Four, the Super Bowl, the tournament, whatever sports and arts analogy you want to mix together. The Academy Awards are Sunday night on ABC, and we're going to talk a little bit about some of my picks, choices, who got left out, what do we do about the broadcast, all that sort of thing. But I have some guests in studio to hang out with me. Joining me, finally, on the film show, she's hung out with me a little bit on the blues program, but a photographer, princess, real princess, not fake princess, what social media says. We'll explain that a little later. And just a good friend, Whitney Kincaid. How are you, Whitney?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming back. We had some scheduling adjustments, and we thought better late than never. And joining us is a film fan and a cohort, Jack Story. Hi, Jack.
Hi, Matt. How's it going?
I've pulled up your IMDb page, so we'll be getting stories later.
Oh,
so,
no.
Or not with that reaction. Okay, very good. So, before we get into the Academy Awards, there are two films that opened this weekend, one that is up for an award, a couple actually. So that is the plight of the film scene here in Indianapolis. Sometimes it takes a nomination for it to finally come to Indianapolis, and there is a film that is up for Best Foreign Language Film as well as Best Cinematography. Probably doesn't have a chance in either one, and that's a shame. This is a film that made my top 10. The German film Never Look Away. And this is from the writer and director, oh gosh, pardon my German, Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck, best known as the writer and director of The Lives of Others a few years ago. And this is the story of a young artist who escapes Nazi Germany, winds up living in West Germany at the end of World War II, and the conflict between art and government. Hopefully we won't have this problem anytime soon in around these parts, but it's interesting to see what is government approved artwork as well as freelance artwork. And as somebody who is a so-called artist, I'm a sucker for films about the creative process. There's a few of them out there. But watching this stuff being created, watching what is considered controversial, and this is, of course, we're talking about post-World War II, and some of the stuff is still frowned upon these days. So it's about 2.5 hours. I think it has a little more of a pulse lengthwise than, say, Roma. And there's some lovely, lovely artwork in this. So I go check that out. And especially now that it's in theaters. And again, if I was voting, I would give it Best Foreign Language Film, but I don't have a ballot, but I have this podcast. So there. Also opening in theaters this weekend, and it's strange that they put this out here. It's not up for anything, but it's really, really strong. It's the Mads Mikkelsen film Arctic. Now, Mads Mikkelsen, one of the current great cinema faces. We know him from the TV series Hannibal, everything from Casino Royale to the last version of The Three Musketeers that nobody asked for.
Rogue One.
Rogue One. But anyway, it is co-written and directed by Joe Penna, and it's a man stranded in the Arctic after a plane crash. And I thought, wow, they're putting this out in the dead of winter. I would maybe push it back to the summer for a contrast, but that didn't happen. if you're a fan of films like, because a few years ago, my top film that when it came out that year was All Is Lost, the Robert Redford at Sea film.
J.C. Chandor. Yeah.
Yes. And this has a similar feel to that, only it's shot in Iceland. So we go, the film opens with him already doing his daily routine. Actually, it opens with him basically still carving out SOS in the ground for anybody flying over. He has a routine of ice fishing, saving fish, coming in while when it starts to get a little dicey or get dark. He's already lost a couple toes. Something like The Gray, there's no monologues. There was some conflict with animals, but not as much as you would think, and I think not as much as Hollywood would like. But there's also what happens when a rescue copter crashes and he's got to take care of somebody else.
So would this be fair to call this Castaway on Ice?
No, because Helen Hunt didn't cheat on him. Yeah, that's another one you could put it to. And what was one that was done last year with Shane Woodley.
Adrift,
which was, yeah, Fault in Our Stars meets All Is Lost. Yeah. That one's a little sad. That's way sappier than Arctic.
I like The Gray, though. How would you compare this to The Gray?
Oh, this is way more stripped down than The Gray. Less navel gazing, more just the. I talked with fellow film critic Chris Lloyd over at the Film Yap and Indie Style Fame. He wasn't as emotionally attached to it because with the character. I didn't mind that because I think we're more peeking in on his means of survival, which has now become routine, as opposed to we don't see him when it crashes. We've now seen, you know, so we don't get to see like Castaway, what his life was like before it, and then the actual action itself. So we're post-action. We're into the
you
routine.
Just dropped right
in. Yeah, I guess it kind of dropped right in. And that might be hard for some.
The toes thing definitely is reminiscent of the tooth problem.
Yeah, there's one little moment of that, just enough to remind you, yeah, he's been here. He's been here a while. And then when he has to take care of somebody else. Ma Nature, of course, makes a few appearances. There are aspects of that you would think of shot in Iceland. You have the ice, you have the mountain climb, you have a polar bear showing up again. Not as much as you would, not quite the edge either. But then that's a Mammoth screenplay, and that's another story.
Mm-hmm. Was that Mammoth?
Yeah, he did. He did the screenplay. I believe
the Alec Baldwin movie.
Yeah, the Alec Baldwin and Anthony Hopkins stuck in the woods.
Right.
And there's a bear, and the bear's still not the loudest one of the film.
Was it 96?
Something like that. Yeah.
So the polar bear, is that the villain of the film?
No.
It's
no,
just one
it shows
scene.
Up. There's actually two polar bear moments. They are not the. This one's not the statue outside the IU library.
Is it a practical effect animal, or is it CGI? Or?
That I think it's. I'm going to guess it's CG. Unless you have classically trained polar bears hanging out doing Bjork videos whenever possible.
Yeah, maybe in the Arctic. I don't know.
This is one of those, if you get a chance to see it on a big screen, sit up as close as you can. I, full disclosure, actually watched this at my desk, and I was still moved. I was still riveted. I was a little, in a good way, exhausted when it was all said and done with this picture. That clocks in at under about an hour 40. So if you've seen all the Oscar-nominated stuff or you're burnt out by the Oscar-nominated stuff, a nice tense film being stuck in Iceland is right up your alley.
That actually sounds really cool. I hadn't heard of it. I know Mads has a movie on Netflix right now.
Which one
called
is?
Polar. So when you said Arctic.
That's not this, right?
No. Polar is kind of like a John Wick ripoff.
Oh.
And I watched part of it enough to realize.
Hey, there it is. You weren't kidding.
Enough to realize this is not John Wick. So.
Yeah, he's I forget.
Polar Arctic, they're just so similar in name.
And that's probably not going to help matters for
I don't
either
think
one.
So.
So, I forgot he was the priest at Eternity's Gate. Like as I mentioned before, he's one of the great faces of modern cinema.
I feel like if people can't picture him, he was the Bond villain in Casino Royale,
right,
which was the Daniel Craig reboot, and he had that kind of bloody eye and
even I know who that is.
Yeah. Yes. He was in Doctor Strange and Salvation. And as I mentioned, he was in the series Hannibal as Hannibal Lecter. The Hunt, A Royal Affair. As I mentioned, he was Rochefort in Three Musketeers Nobody Needed.
Galen Erso.
Valhalla Rising. Clash of the Titans. Yeah, just a after the wedding. Another that's a
he
date
stays
film.
Busy.
He does, and he is. I think graduated to. He's always good, even if the material is not.
I think he's really strong.
Anyway, that is out there. Go check that out. Okay, shifting gears just a little bit. At IU Cinema, this all depends on when you are listening to this podcast and when it's available, but I'll do this anyway. Friday night at 7 o'clock, director Avi Nesher will be here to discuss at IU to discuss the 2018 film The Other Story, and then at 10 o'clock, the 1984 film She. Saturday, February 23rd at 4 o'clock, Alfred Hitchcock, Strangers on a Train. And then at 7 o'clock, the three films Space is the Place, Afronauts, and Polly 1. Sunday, February 24th at 1 o'clock, Easy Rider. And at 4 o'clock, a Behavior. Monday, February 25th at 7 o'clock, National Diploma from 2014. Thursday, February 28th at 7 o'clock, and Friday, March 1st at 7 o'clock, one of the films that's up for several awards on Sunday, the Polish film Cold War. If you like A Star is Born mixed in with Roma photography and post-war Poland.
Cold War's for you.
This is your film. And it looks great. And then at 10 o'clock, Friday, March 1st, film that might get Best Documentary, Free Solo.
I've not seen it. My friend was just telling me all about it.
Really tense.
Yeah. Apparently it has nothing to do with Han Solo. But he saw it and I think kind of echoed your sentiments of seeing that on a big screen.
Yep. Sit up close.
Is that at IMAX downtown here in
Indy? I do not know if that's at IMAX. It is at IU Cinema. And then Saturday, March 2nd at 4 o'clock, Next Door Spy. And at 7 o'clock, Zero Motivation. Sunday, March 3rd at 7 o'clock, Double Exposure 2019. Monday, March 4th at 7 o'clock, Ghost Town to Havana. All of that is happening at IU Cinema. At the Historic Art Craft Theater, we talked about Arctic and how cold movies and cold weather. Well, apparently that's a theme because at the Historic Art Craft Theater on the 22nd and 23rd, 2 and 7:30 p.m., John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, class. I love it.
Saw this in the theater with my dad and brother.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
How old were you? And
I was 12, knucklehead.
My goodness.
I was a 12-year-old knucklehead. So
I can't picture that.
Thank you, dear. Kurt Russell, Woodford Brimley, Keith David, Ennio Morricone score,
yep.
Really claustrophobic, pretty good technology for the time being, and nothing like the 1950s version, and that's really okay. You can have...
Was that one called The Thing from Outer Space or The Thing from Another World?
It was called The Thing from Outer Space, and then they shortened it to
The Thing.
Just The Thing. Yeah, so, and no, not the muscular Cheeto from the Fantastic Four. That's another thing for another time.
Right.
Sunday, February 24th at the Art Craft Theater at 2 o'clock, Forrest Gump. And on Friday and Saturday, March 1st and 2nd, Friday at 7:30 p.m., Saturday at 2:30, 5 and 7:30 p.m. And this is one of those crapshoots where these are not going to open on 3,000 screens, but you got a chance to see a really nice collection. Best of the Fest. Best of the films, some of the award-winning films from the Heartland Film Festival. And then Tuesday, March 5th at 7:30 p.m., a 35-millimeter print of the original 1968 Mel Brooks film, The Producers.
Oh.
So all of that is happening at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin.
Do you rank Jenny from Forrest Gump in the all-time movie villains with Biff Tannen and people like that?
Or the bear, or the animals in the gray.
Yeah.
That I've heard that theory.
There's a lot of funny memes about Jenna.
But that requires me watching Forrest Gump again, and I'd rather watch the other Best Picture nominees from 1994. So there is
was that Shawshank that year?
Shawshank, Pulp Fiction, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Quiz Show.
Oof, wow.
Oh, that was the year that Jurassic Park didn't
no,
get.
No, Jurassic Park
the
was
93.
Oh, just missed it.
I was
it.
Eight.
Okay.
I remember. I could.
I'm sorry.
For the whole hour about Jurassic Park.
Really?
So could I. I actually, my sister
it's
and I.
It's in my top five.
My sister and I were, you know, a little like that, I think 11 and 9, and we said, Dad, this is the best movie ever. Do you think this is probably going to win Best Picture at the Oscar?
Aww.
My dad had to break it to us that movies like that don't win. So my sister and I decided, well, whatever wins we don't want to see that. That won't be our type of movie.
Way to stick it to the man.
Yeah. So I've never seen Schindler's List on principle.
I learned that lesson in 2008 with The Dark Knight, I think.
You did.
Did I hear right? You were 8 when Jurassic Park came out?
Yep, 1993.
Regal, 11.
You weren't here yet, Whitney.
He's younger than me.
Regal Village Park 17 in Carmel opened that summer.
It was only 14 then. 14 screens. He and I grew up next
was
to
Was it?
Uh-huh.
Wow. But it was sold out there, so we had to go to Lowe's College Park on 86th in Michigan. And I remember enough of it that I was hiding under the seats when the T-Rex escaped from the paddock and just like down there crawling with popcorn and
sure.
soda and
Cinemark.
Yeah, I loved it. It had a huge effect on me.
That's pretty cute.
That was the summer I graduated college.
Nice.
Yeah. Did I read that one? I also went through, that was the summer. I had a lot of time on my hands. I was working the box office summer theater at Ball State. And
wait, is this 93 or 94?
93. And this was the time where I was reading everything before watching it. Because I had no, too much time. I had written my first play my senior year, and I was reading I read The Firm in like a day and a half. Because John Grisham novels scream to be read, like, you know, fast, and it's like a screenplay. And of course, a bunch of us saw it as a group, and half of us had read the novel, the other half had not. Therefore, about an hour and a half in, some of us got really grumpy, and it just became Tom Cruise running for the last hour, which is every other Tom Cruise film. Well, every Tom Cruise film.
And 24 years later, he's still running.
Still running. Still runs faster than all of us. Mm-hmm. That's all right.
He pumps the arms really well.
He does. Mm-hmm. But of course, I just couldn't believe that they mucked up that last hour. And I heard stories. Of course, John Grisham was not that thrilled and talked to Sidney Pollack. And I think Sidney Pollack basically said, "Did you get your check? Did it clear?" and because I had written something, I took it very personally. I'm like, that would be like somebody adapting my work because that's first world problems to have. And so I remember reading like Jurassic Park and Rising Sun and some other stuff that came out that year to see where the adaptation went wrong. And I'm older now. It doesn't mean anything. So, So I would say with Jurassic Park this big, because my friend Andy, it's also his favorite film of all time.
That's his number one.
That's his number one. So, of course, last year was a real kick to the chest for him.
He didn't like
not at all. Aww. Not at all.
I enjoyed it.
Did you?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, you're never going to get something that will match the magic of the first one.
That is me with Star Wars. I was 7 when the first Star Wars film came out. And the only
May 77.
Yeah, the only thing that came close was... Oh, gosh. I've lost track because I'm old. But it was one of the reboots. It might have been Rogue. But watching guys my age with their kids who were 6, 7, 8 years old.
You found that cool enough.
From the dad standpoint, watching the kid have the experience I did 40 years ago.
I know. I'm so mad I don't have a kid to take to Star Wars movies.
Borrow a kid.
I have then.
Rent
just,
a kid.
Yeah. The cops usually show up when I walk out.
Oh, don't do that. That's like, I think I've joked with Whitney. My daughter's 17. Very, very early on, we said, tell people you watch grown-up movies. Because if you say you watch adult movies, CPS comes a-knocking. That's not good.
Let me see your hard drive.
Right. Hi, Robert Kraft. No.
that was late-breaking, though.
And I should mention, because if those of you who listened to last week's podcast with Erica Barker cracked me up because I was griping. We recorded it about, probably 10 a.m. Last Friday, and I was grumbling, of course, about the changes that the Academy Award were going to do.
Which they've
And then
gone
they
back
buckled
on.
Like a belt
of course
or
they did.
The NFL. So by 7 o'clock, I had pulled into a parking lot in Connersville to see a play and saw that. And, of course, I wrote, it was because of us. They buckled.
Of
so
course.
Way to go.
They heard you.
Yeah.
They heard you out there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, the podcast in Indy. So, but, yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit. New on DVD and Blu-ray this week, Star is Born, as you mentioned. So... That is out there. Is the soundtrack with the can it be?
No,
that's how they get you.
Yeah, that's how. Well, they put the CD right next to the Blu-ray.
Yeah, that's how they get you.
Merchandising. That's
Yeah, M-O-I-C-H.
Mowage.
That's her sounding like a Bugs Bunny cartoon.
It's a Spaceballs reference.
Very good.
Speaking of Star Wars, Spaceballs.
Stars Born the album.
Stars Born
the flamethrower.
Stars Born the whiskey bottle. No, 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 that's fine. So anyway, that is finally out there. Because that's this will get, if it hasn't already gotten a huge boost in rentals and sales, good timing for Warner Brothers to do that.
Yeah.
Also out on video. Did anybody ask for another Robin Hood?
No, and I'm told this one is horrible.
Unless it's animated.
Well, no, we already have an animated Robin Hood.
Well, if they want to make it like Pixar and really cool, I would allow that.
No, I'm okay.
They did Brave, and that was kind of close enough.
What if they had humans dress up like foxes and bears and stuff?
Taron Egerton, who plays Robin Hood, it looked like they had some really cool action scenes. And I love how Ben Mendelsohn was coming into it. Anything with Ben Mendelsohn.
He needs to do a rom-com really fast. I love Ben Mendelsohn, too. He's a classic that guy. Yeah. And I know he did it. There was a small independent film that was in. I got a screener of it. And I really liked it because he was not playing middle management D-bag. I have to look it up. I'll have to do some hot clicking and typing here.
Anyways, apparently that Robin Hood just missed the mark on all accounts. But now Taron Egerton, they released a trailer yesterday. He's playing Elton John.
Yes, they're jumping on the Bohemian Rhapsody bandwagon very fast about that.
And speaking of music biopics,
yes.
Finally, and I've been waiting so, so long for Motley Crue's The Dirt to be adapted into a film. It is one of the best books.
Okay.
I won't say best, but the most entertaining read. Can't put this down. I've ever had in my life.
Is that a Netflix release?
Yeah. So Jeff Tremaine did it. He did the Jackass movies, and so he has experience.
I've read parts of it.
The book,
yeah,
The Dirt.
Okay, first off, I guess I'm being old school on this. It's R-rated, right? I know it's Netflix or unrated. It has to be.
Very.
You cannot have a PG-13 Suicide Squad. You can't.
Right.
Those guys.
And they did.
Yeah. They did. So.
And it was bad.
The Land of Steady Habits. That is the film that came out last year with Ben Mendelsohn. Connie Nielsen is in that as well. Edie Falco. And he's a guy who's still trying to move on after his divorce.
Okay.
But he's not middle management D-bag. So
but
I
want full-on rom-com.
Why not? He deserves it. He needs to smooch somebody.
We don't want to go Gerard Butler the guy.
No, not that. But, I mean, he's... there are certain ones when you get in... there was a many, many years ago. It was Paul Rudnick when he wrote for Premiere Magazine. And
which that's not still in.
No, that's long gone. Long gone. But there was a reference to certain actors that just need to be a wacky dad or get a rom-com. And I think the original text was Paul Rudnick, his pen name is nom de plume, wanted to have a remake of Full House with James Woods, Christopher Walken, and Bruce Dern or something like that. And I thought. Yeah, and they need to be in a rom-com. And I thought Ben Mendelsohn deserves to be in a rom-com or be a wacky dad.
I'd watch that.
Yes, he's getting a lot of money for Star Wars and Ready Player. Absolutely, go for it. But
Captain Marvel
and Captain Marvel. So, kiss a girl. Let him kiss a girl. It's okay. So, anyway, that is out. And I heard also this week, Can You Ever Forgive Me is also out on video. And I'm hearing there's no Blu-ray.
That surprised everybody with the nominations, didn't it? Or was that WGA?
No, it's not that. I think I remember when I saw the trailer for it earlier this year because I here at Film Sociology, I've been yelling for, can we have something where Melissa McCarthy doesn't fall down, go boom? And this is it. And that's kind of all I really asked for with this film. And this film, that film delivers that and then some.
Yeah. I'm told she's great in it.
And she is. Well-deserved Best Actress nomination. Really happy for Richard E. Grant to finally get a little recognition. I believe it is also up, for Best Adapted Screenplay.
You ain't kidding. I'm on Amazon. I do not see a Blu-ray.
And somebody, and I've tried to do a little bit of research, and nobody's had any explanation why.
Do you think like that's the next step? They're just gonna go past home video altogether, and it's just streaming, like Whitney here.
I don't know. Really?
Yeah, she. Mm-hmm. I don't even think she owns a player. Do you?
No, I don't. I only got a TV 2-3 years ago.
Well, I gotta take off that gift list.
Jeez.
I'm more into music.
Did you get her a Columbia House subscription?
No, I'm giving her my Betamax collection. Oh. See how she likes.
I have a Betamax player.
Do I have really? I have a Blu-ray collection that's in the, I think it's in the thousands now.
I don't count. That's materialistic. But there is that there's a certain faction of us that feels that unless you don't own it, unless you physically own it, because
I'm
Netflix
or
streaming
yeah.
will take away something at their whim.
I'm with my buddy Spielberg on the streaming thing.
Yeah, but don't replace the Blu-rays with walkie-talkies or something like that.
Oh, my God.
Sorry, that was easy.
That was too easy. Yeah.
Okay.
It's an E.T. reference.
So, shifting gears, I guess, we mentioned the Academy Awards, and it's kind of sprinkled throughout, and, of course, the broadcast is Sunday, and...
Who's hosting?
No, and I remember, of course, the last time they did, it was a wonderful fiasco, because it had the Rob Lowe number, and it was produced by Alan Carr, and... I don't mind the length of this award show because there's only two award shows. I watch this and I watch the Tonys. So I don't care about the others.
Right.
What is the length, if you don't mind?
It doesn't matter. It could be 5 hours for all I care.
I
so long as I got my
around four,
probably four. So long as I have my pizza and my drinks and what and I'm home or I get invited with great expenses paid to some event. It's happened. But But no, I don't care how long it goes. It really doesn't bother me. I do not, you know, I have to take my daughter to school in the morning. I don't have to look good. I just have to drive. So it really.
So you're saying if they just shortened it and cut out the.
Oh, I'd have been irate. Yeah. I'd have been irate. And I'm still irate that, you know, I'm an old guy. I'm still irate that it's no longer just five films for Best Picture. And I'm irate that they took off the Career Achievement Awards and made it a separate thing.
Mm.
Wheel out Eli Wallach and Kirk Douglas and whoever's winning it this year.
Oh, bless his heart.
Kirk Douglas is totally hitting on you if he ever meets you.
I hope so. God willing.
Totally.
And Michael will swoop in for the kill.
The story I've always heard, and I don't know if it's true. I think it's true because I believe HBO did a documentary about father and son. It was that the story Michael tells is that anytime dad calls and Michael picks up, dad will go, I don't want to talk to you. Way to go, buddy.
That's great.
So, okay. So we'll go through. Jack, do you have a favorite for Best Picture? And, or do you want to do pick with your heart, pick with your head? We're kind of loosey-goosey here at Film Sociology.
No, I think it's going to be kind of cut and dry. I really think it'll be...
So Green Book?
I really think it'll be Roma.
Yeah.
I just think the other ones each kind of have their own...
Pluses and minuses?
Pluses and minuses, and in a lot of cases, minuses, especially with something like Green Book that, you know, I enjoyed for what it was when I saw it in, you know, I got the screener, actually, of it.
Yep.
And I enjoyed it for what it was, and I enjoyed the performances, but then I went on to find out that, a lot of it's baloney.
I'm sorry, Beautiful Mind doesn't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. and the same thing kind of with Bohemian Rhapsody. Like, you could kind of shoot holes through... a lot of the main story points in that. Like, for instance, Freddie never really left the band and tried to go out on his own.
Right.
And, you know, there was never a record exec that was condemning their music.
But we have to have a nemesis of some
kind. Yeah, you got to Hollywood
Just like you really didn't need the A&R guy from Star Is Born, but
right.
You need that second half. So.
Right. But that scene, you know, even if it was fictional, gave us Mike Myers. In Bohemian Rhapsody, and I thought
get
that was
it,
a great moment.
It's, yeah.
Well, and, did you catch the line? He goes,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did the whole Wayne's World reference.
Yeah.
So.
Did you catch that one?
No, I didn't.
Did you know it was Mike Myers?
Well, yes.
Okay.
Just checking.
So they were talking about what album they're going to release as the single, and, of course, the band wanted Bohemian Rhapsody, and Mike Myers' record exec didn't want it. He goes, we need something that teenagers will churn up and the music in their car and bop their heads to.
Oh,
which,
okay.
Of course, is what they do in Wayne's
yeah.
World. So
well, yeah.
The irony's great.
I could recite Wayne's World 2, the entire thing.
But yeah, it kind of looks like it's Roma versus the field for me.
Really? What's been interesting this year has been the if you've read up, and I've read a little bit of Writers Guild, Directors Guild, SAG, all the other award shows, there really hasn't been a dominant one.
Yeah.
A favorite.
A favorite, if you will. Thank you. And so between that and the fact that the voting demographics have changed, mm-hmm. it's no longer not as many old white dudes.
Right.
So those two elements together make it an interesting toss-up.
More progressive.
There is that. That's why I think, you know, the ones that I've heard, I've read about that have a shot. You've mentioned Roma.
Black Panther.
Green Book. Black Panther, well, the problem was, I think when the popular category came, I think it ruined its chances.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody was thinking about.
Black Panther's your classic. It's just an honor to be nominated.
Yeah, and the
that's all it is.
And there's a great idea. Yeah, it would be a great idea of having a superhero film finally win Best Picture. Mm-hmm. I think it'd have the same effect as, say, the Two Towers,
right?
With less endings, and so there is that. But Bohemian Rhapsody, it's the flawed biopic. Black Klansman, it could be finally giving giving Spike Lee his due 30 years too late.
And that's why I feel like he's nominated for director over somebody like Bradley Cooper. Is just strictly kind of like when Scorsese won for The Departed.
But
it's
not your best movie. No, it's not. Well, that's not the first time that's ever happened with anybody. So.
I know. Well, that one just comes to mind because I love The Departed.
People who don't. And by the way, I've seen the petition about getting rid of the rat. No.
That's ridiculous.
That's on you. Sorry.
Petition? What is this?
The final scene in The Departed.
After Wahlberg shoots.
No, I've seen The Departed.
There's a moment, and it was... It was a polarizing moment. I laughed my butt off. Is at the very final moment, there's a camera looking out the window, looking at Boston, and a rat scurries past the windowsill.
Yeah.
After
Wahlberg shoots Matt
Damon. I was
going to
say spoiler alert so people could.
No, that's fine.
I'm sure everybody's seen The Departed, I hope, if you're listening.
Hopefully.
To this
and by the way, Soylent Green is people. So anyway, and so some folks have been wanting that digitally removed. And
like, why?
They didn't like it. So.
Okay.
Can we just stop messing with movies that are in the can? George Lucas.
George, Steven. Of the eight, looking at my list, I guess.
Does anything stand out as you as like, you don't belong here?
Oh, sure. Here we go. I always do this every year. What would be my five Best Picture nominees? Favorite. Star is Born, Klansman, Panther.
Roma's not in there for you, huh?
I liked Roma. I didn't love Roma.
Yeah. I'm similar with it.
It takes a while. It took about a half hour for me to get into it.
It doesn't get going.
And the sync, yes, the black and white long take going from right to left. I know, I saw that.
We get it, Caron. You're really good.
Right. But the scene in the hospital and the scene at the end near the beach are two of the most intense things I saw this year.
Yeah.
So I will give it that.
Yeah.
And of course, you can check out Laura McPhee's write-up in Nouveau, who said it's not really a celebration of the women that raised him. It's a celebration of the male gaze. So, yeah, because the film that ranked highest on my best list that made this was The Favorite. Favorite was my number five. My number one is First Reformed.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Is that Ethan Hawke?
And he's not even nominated. Yeah. And
that's your favorite movie of the year?
That was my favorite film of last year.
Wow.
So, I guess from that standpoint, I would vote for The Favorite. But yeah, it's not a particularly strong list out of the eight. They're good. I don't think they're great. So, but yeah, it could be any of those. I hope, as I mentioned on RTV6, if you're listening to this, don't gamble. This is for entertainment purposes only.
It's not legal yet, anyway.
Going to the acting categories, and this goes back to what I was mentioning earlier, the Academy is really good at giving folks their just due. They're really good at giving a career achievement award, even if it's not necessarily the person's best work. If the demographic hadn't changed over the last few years, I could easily see Willem Dafoe getting Best Actor, because he's been nominated several times and has not won. Glenn Close winning Best Actress, which I still think is going to happen regardless.
Oh, you think so?
Over
Olivia?
I'd be happy to be wrong, but I think it's, not enough people saw The Wife, but not enough people saw Still Alice either.
Right.
I love Olivia Colman in it, but I think this might be the one where somebody gets their career achievement.
Interesting.
I really like Glenn Close in The Wife, and it's a restrained performance based on what that character has to do, and she has some really lovely verbal tennis with Jonathan Pryce.
I could see McCarthy winning it.
That's also a possibility.
I think she's also one of those people that people just generally like her.
People would want to root for her.
Yeah.
I mean, and she did a disservice to me, of course, back in 2016, but I'll let it go.
Oh, no, you brought it up.
What?
Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's a sore subject with this one.
Don't, yeah, let's not go there. I'm not going to go there. I'm sorry, bro. All right.
I'm going to word this carefully. You please tell me you have never said a sentence that involves the words childhood and violated.
It's like a South Park episode, like show me on the doll where it hurts.
Yeah,
you.
You didn't say that, did you?
Well,
we have things to do.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's just keep it. We'll keep it professional.
Okay. All right.
Nothing was violated.
Thank you. That term gets thrown around a little bit, and
it started with the prequels.
Okay.
And extended into Indiana Jones and
right.
Yeah, I think it's
okay.
Overused.
All right.
I don't think I've actually ever even said that.
You're a good first guest. You're a good sport.
All right.
Time heals all wounds, Jack.
And not watching it. Anyway.
I would love to see Lady Gaga, but I just don't see it happening.
Mm-hmm.
As great as she was and as great as a talent she is, just musically, theatrically, across the board, I think she's wonderful. I think it's either going to be Coleman, Close, or McCarthy.
That's not bad. One who is not, who's been nominated several times and hasn't won yet, Amy Adams for Vice, even though I don't think she's very good in it, but I think Regina King is probably going to take that one for If Beale Street Could Talk.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
Who doesn't love Amy Adams?
I don't know. She
stole my heart in Enchanted.
Yeah, a lot of us.
And then
your heart? I'm wondering if
June
we're on the
Bug.
Same date. Oh, really?
Well, I have to credit my buddy Laura Jansen. Laura Jansen, she and I every year would bet on the Oscars, and occasionally we would throw either an obscure thing, because we used to bet on what would get nominated and how many we would get right and then who would win, and she called Amy Adams and June Bug. So I always have to give her props for that.
Wow.
I wish all pregnant ladies were that cheery.
It was catch.
Hello, Lynn.
It was Catch Me If You Can for me.
That's pretty good too.
Aww.
Yeah,
with the braces
so
and everything.
Okay, you brought it up.
Yeah, Princess.
So Whitney,
uh-huh.
would you mind telling folks one of your sides besides photographer extraordinaire?
Thank you.
And
thank
hanging
you.
Out here on the show, you are
shopping.
You are Princess for Hire.
I sure am. Yes, I actually was in the.
Don't get any ideas, Robert Kraft.
I was in the Indianapolis Star for some of my charity work as a princess, but I do like birthday parties. It's Princess for Hire type of thing. But yeah, I started out at actual Disney World when I was in college, and then a friend roped me into coming out of retirement for his kids' party, and then I started getting requests regularly, and now I am a 37-year-old Cinderella impersonator, which feels kind of strange sometimes. But
no.
Yeah, I do a lot of Elsa.
I was going to say, how big an influence was Giselle in Enchanted?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was one of those, somebody had to make me watch it like most films, but since it's such a farce, it just hit every nail right on the head. Her saying she's going to go, like, if she can't find lodging, she's going to take a nap in a hollow tree. Or Prince Charming saying, you know, like, I like you. We shall be married in the morning. You know, it's how absurd it all is. So it's a good one to watch when I get a little burnout from birthday party after birthday party as Elsa.
She, watching that, and yeah, Emma was young enough at that time. I think we watched it a lot. But Amy Adams took that ball and just ran with it.
Yeah.
Hard.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and she was over 30, too,
yeah,
which fully, was my favorite part.
Fully committed. I mean, so between June Bug and then I'd forgotten, like, she's one of the best things about Talladega Nights.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
She's in that. And then to do, I was like, and then,
and
you know, to do Giselle and then the other great turn. And it's actually one my daughter quotes constantly is her as Charlene in The Fighter in the David O. Russell film.
Yeah, I forgot
so she
about
was able to break the kind of princess stigma and play a tough gal. She's capable
great.
Of anything. So
she's great and ageless, too.
Yeah, she's tough in American Hustle, too.
Yeah, she is.
Russell as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, it could be I could see her getting it because she's been nominated so many times. But I think she's not found, I think, her masterpiece yet.
Which I don't think it's Vice either.
A lot
either.
Of good work out of it.
Yes.
Though.
So hopefully Regina King. So that way an Academy Award can go to a woman who I've loved since Boys in the Hood, and it will always have a special place because of the Boondocks.
Yes.
So, and then the other person who has a chance because it's a career achievement, Sam Elliott. For Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
Mr. Ali, I know, already has. My theory is, well, he's already got one. So, and I know he's got a strong chance to win another one in Green Book. Adam Driver is very popular, and he is really good in Black Klansman. And Rockwell already has one. And Grant is another one who possibly could have one as a career achievement because he's been around for a long time.
Yeah, you said you liked him and Melissa McCarthy.
I did. So, but I think people would just want to see Sam Elliott on stage and scare the censors for a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And he is
to see Sam
really good because he's Bradley Cooper's brother, not his dad.
Yeah, which was weird, but
a little weird.
There was a scene where he said, like, "Dad had me when he was 17."
Yeah, like, wait, you're not dad?
Yeah, exactly. But that scene, like, where they confront each other about the dad's gravesite washing away, and they come to blows, and then the one where he drops him off in the truck. And Bradley Cooper's kind of like crying. He's like, you know, I looked up to you, not dad.
And Sam Elliott being vulnerable, that doesn't happen all that often. There was a film a couple years back called The Hero, which is really a nice underrated picture. You know, because he's another one. He, like Ben Mendelsohn, he gets paid to be Sam Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets paid handsomely. And bully for him on that. So anytime I can see something a little out of the ordinary, like The Hero, or I'll See You in My Dreams, or something like this.
Yeah.
It's very, very cool.
Yeah, I think it's kind of a toss-up between him and Mahershala.
Yeah.
If it's a popularity contest, it's going to go to Mahershala Ali, just because he's everywhere right now.
Yeah, and
he's got True Detective right now.
And he's got a hot streak going.
Yeah, and he's just super talented. But then again, you know, it could come down to kind of, like you said, rewarding people for maybe not this work, but all their work, and that could be Sam Elliott for sure.
Right. I think Rami Malek was. There seems to be a toss up between Rami Malek and possibly Christian Bale. Bale already has one of course, for The Fighter, and people can say both of them have something in common. You can say about the performance that the performances are better than the film itself.
Yeah.
And that's. Yeah.
Rami was superb.
Yeah.
Best
thing about it by far.
Do you know, Whitney, who was considered for that role for years and years and years?
Tell me.
Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yep.
Really?
And,
yeah. He wanted to do... he wanted to dive
Mr.
in...
Mr. Isla Fisher.
He wanted to dive in a little deeper into the party scenes than the... But Queen wanted to do a...
Wow.
The remaining members of Queen wanted nothing to do
with it. No, they wanted to do a nicer version of Let It Be, just kind of creating how songs got created in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's another slight bone, but...
Yeah.
Personality can go a long way, I guess.
How did you just watch Bohemian before coming to this tape?
Yeah, I was crazy about it. I mean, it was one of those I didn't know what to expect, except what I know of Queen and know of Freddie Mercury in it. I feel like it's just a really hard job to do a biopic at all. You have to be truthful, to dramatize it in such a way that your audience can pay attention and like it.
Yep.
Your actor needs to be, you know, resemble and sound and have mannerisms. Like, it's such a quilt to weave where everything has to fall into place. I was really surprised that, I mean, the photography looks amazing. I liked it a lot.
Too.
Yeah.
And how well they replicated that, even down to the Pepsi cups on the piano.
Is it one of those down to the detail?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was
like
in high school.
Like his Adidas shoes, the leather band on his arm.
I got to watch a Live Aid when I was in high school. So when we got
Live Aid?
Yeah, oh, yeah, Live Aid. All right, well, you know, age. Thank my parents. things got randy in 1969. But anyway, watching the Live Aid section, I immediately ran home, of course, because I'm that guy.
And YouTubed it.
The set list. Yeah, I was looking at the set list. And there's like two songs.
Hammer to Fall was not one that I was familiar
with. And Crazy Little Thing Called Love didn't make it in the film. It's really okay.
Not in the Live Aid section.
Well, no, but
they weren't going to do the full concert.
Well,
they came close.
Maybe, darn close. Yeah. But anyway, it was in the right order. So I know music nerds are out there going, all right, that's pretty good.
People with hazy memories that are like, I think that's the way it went too.
Yeah. I think I've told the story before, but I will share it again with you guys, with my daughter and I. It was a rough week at the Soucy House. And the one thing I'll give Bohemian Rhapsody credit for was, I think more than any other film last year for me, it did its job.
Yes.
So
exactly.
We lost both our cats in a span of a week. Over the weekend, it was like that weekend, we found one of our cats outside. Mm-hmm. And then the following Monday, Emma and I saw Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Oh, wow.
Right. Well, and that one we didn't know going in, that there's a subplot about Melissa McCarthy and her sick cat.
Mm. No.
And yeah, and we're both
not sure.
3 days out, and we're like, oh, God. So
in comes Bohemian.
And then we see Bohemian, and there's the scene where he is successful enough that he has a house big enough for every room for one of his cats.
How many did he have?
That's my dream.
I think he had like five.
I have six.
And Emma and I both looked at each other like, But other than that scene, it pulled, because that day, that earlier that day, we had to put our second cat to sleep.
Emma was
determined to take the cat home so we could die amongst his loved ones, and I knew the vet was going to talk her out of it.
Yeah.
And so we did what we had to do, and then I took her to dinner, and I said, "Look, let's turn our brains off and go see Bohemian Rhapsody," and that's what the film did. Except for the scene with the cats. But
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
No, I love that. It did its job.
It did its job. So it's not the best film. It didn't make my top 10.
Right.
But it did its job.
Yeah. Well, my personal thing with biopics at all is like, if somebody's too A-list, if somebody's too well-known, it just looks like Nicole Kidman doing a really good job playing Virginia Woolf. Not like, oh, that's Virginia Woolf.
Mm-hmm.
So
by a nose.
Good one. Yeah. This actor particularly got me to believe, or like, you know.
And what's fascinating about, and it's just, it's also an example of the music biopic is cinematic comfort food.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking with some folks off air over at Six, because one of the more underrated comedies of the last decade is Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
That's a great movie. I can't get on board. That's a film that
absolutely eviscerates the music biopic, because at the time, Ray and Walk the Line and mm-hmm. everything like
yep.
that, you can't get on board with it?
No, I can't.
Why not?
I don't know. It doesn't strike me as the kind of spoof like a Blazing Saddle or something that lives
really?
On well past its years.
When was the last time you watched it?
That's a good question, too. Maybe it's worth a rewatch.
Did you watch it with somebody you don't like or something?
No.
Oh, we've had those.
It deserves another
shot. Yeah, I'd give it another shot, because especially since
because
there's still
that
plenty out there.
If Whitney watches Not Another Teen Movie.
Fair enough.
Wow.
I'm in.
Ladies and gentlemen, cinematic deals are made here at Film Sociology.
You can't see a handshake going.
I witnessed. Okay, Notary Public. Very good. Okay, that's happening.
Before we skip off to Bohemian Rhapsody.
Right.
And I know Matt knows this, but can Whitney tell me the, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm sorry. What's the similarity between Bohemian Rhapsody and Jurassic Park?
Oh, gosh.
Do you know, Matt?
I don't know.
I'm not sure. Go. Take it, Jack. You had my curiosity.
Obvious?
Now you have my attention.
He's great with the quizzes.
The basis for Queen in the movie was Joseph Mazzello, who played Tim Murphy in Jurassic Park. Remember, he put the goggles
look
on.
Look at that. Look
heavy?
At that.
Then they're expensive. Put them down.
Hardcore.
Wow. Yep.
Very strong, sir.
Mm-hmm. Slow clap.
That's good.
I have a good friend in L.A. who would always see Joseph Mazzello at auditions and be like, crap, no, I'm not going to get it. That was Sean.
Before we move on, is there anything you're particularly rooting for Sunday night?
Oh, I am.
Whitney.
Okay, so before I was a photographer, I was a makeup artist for 14 years.
Ah, yes, we have three up for makeup and hairstyling.
Okay, so I guess there have been advancements made in the field of prosthetics, and that is why Christian Bale really looks like Dick Cheney. I saw that, like, searching for some resemblance of, is that really Batman? Am I watching the wrong trailer?
Yeah.
And I'm still
it's
in
shock.
It's
pretty spectacular, yeah, that transformation. That could get him the award itself.
That I mean, and the fact that it's a lead, and we like Bale. He's, mm-hmm. You know, he's capital S, well, capital
yeah, we
A,
like Bale
serious
as much
artist,
as we hate
and
Cheney.
Yeah. But only if he thanks the Church of Satan like
which
he did
was
at
that
the Golden Globe. Yeah, the Golden
right.
Globe. So
which they call the drunk Oscars.
Right.
Yeah, Bale was phenomenal. He said he's done doing that now, drastically altering his weight.
Four to 5 hours a day.
Well, De Niro said the same thing after The Untouchables. So, yeah, you can relax.
Mm-hmm. Four
you can,
to five
yeah,
hours
you've
a day
done,
in the makeup chair.
As, Sir Larry once said, it's called acting, dear boy. Try it sometime. well, cool. See, and I know because that's Mary Queen of Scots, which also has some cool looks, and Border, which hopefully more people will check out. Mm-hmm. Border. That's a twisted, weird love story about love can happen to all kinds of folks, even the ones at the airport. That's not really what that film is about.
Can anyone tell me why wasn't the Mr. Rogers documentary?
I would say if that, and yeah, I thought it should have made the top. I thought it should have been up for best documentary. It made my top 10 this year. But I bet between that and RBG, certain news networks would get their knickers in a twist.
Sure, sure.
And so I guess the question would be, and as I often do, who would you take out of documentary feature to put Mr. Rogers in?
And I'm not the one to ask. I haven't seen all
right,
of them.
Right. So,
and I didn't even see Free Solo, which
I know
is
got
like
a really good chance. Yeah. So, the one I'm really kind of rooting for, besides, I think Spike.
I have an animated one I'm rooting for.
Spider-Man?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just watched that too.
That film
ago.
Made more money than Mary Poppins.
Did it really?
Yes.
Wow. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Really, really smart about the Spider-Man universe.
Unbelievable.
Way smarter than anybody anticipated. And you
caught
have John Mulaney as Spider-Ham. So.
Yeah, there's a spider pig in it, literally.
Spider and pig, like
in The Simpsons, kind of, yeah.
And also the fact
John
that
Mulaney's great.
The fact that the animated feature list is fairly weak this year, with the exception of maybe Isle of Dogs, Incredibles 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet, Mirai, and then Spider-Man.
Ralph Breaks the Internet has a scene that Whitney would love, where
animated Gal Gadot.
No.
Oh, anybody would know that for sure.
Sarah Silverman's character, Vanellope von Schweetz, enters into a room with all the Disney princesses.
She does.
I've seen that. One of my other princesses definitely made sure I watched that. That was amazing.
That was a hilarious scene.
Cinderella turning her glass slipper into a shank was genius.
You have ideas now.
I sure do.
Stay away, suburban dads.
Yeah, next kid that gets out of line.
Right.
You haven't had a dad.
Never.
Okay.
Not even once.
Just checking.
You know what? Occasionally at the parks, back when I was 20, Alice in Wonderland, a lot of very sweaty dads would get very close to you in a picture.
Ew.
Like, gross and gross in another way. So, we had all kinds of tricks about
it.
Okay. Keep it in line.
Well, we won't ask. We won't reveal
No,
the
she
secret.
Was just really sassy and precocious. It's just things you could say to him.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
The other one, which it won't get it because I know it, quite often you get a screenplay award because you're not going to get Best Picture. And I think The Favorite's going to get Best Original Screenplay. I would love to see Paul Schrader win for First Reformed since it's his only original screenplay nomination, if I remember right.
Ever?
I might. Let's go. Let's some more hot.
Hot clicking.
Hot clicking
Paul
here
Schrader,
at Film
yeah.
Sociology. Good Lord, his first.
Original
That's
screenplay
no,
nomination.
Ever.
Oh, his first ever original.
For his first ever Oscar nomination. Ladies and gentlemen,
I have
talked constantly about Paul Schrader. This is the man who wrote The Yakuza, Taxi Driver, Rolling Thunder, Blue Collar, Hardcore, Raging Bull, American Gigolo, the screenplay for The Last Temptation of Christ, Affliction, Bringing Out the Dead, First Reformed. Never had one. Never, and he's directed most of those. Cat People, Hardcore, Blue Collar, Mishima, Light of Day, Light Sleeper, Touch, Autofocus. If you need a film about a man going down a downward spiral, Paul Schrader is your man. And as I mentioned before, First Reformed was my top film of last year. Ethan Hawke is a small church preacher who's challenged by one of his parishioners and holds up a mirror to faith versus ethics, faith and business, faith and politics. And it's one of the best things Ethan Hawke has ever done in his career. And so the fact that this is Schrader's first nomination after mentioning all those films, especially Taxi Driver and Raging Bull.
I wonder if that didn't get enough love for
it's hard
hitting too close to home with Catholic Church scandals. Maybe.
You think?
Is what kind of preacher is he? Protestant Church? It's, Catholic Church?
I honestly forget, but it is...
Does he wear the collar?
He wears the collar, okay. And his church is pretty much a museum. I mean, he has like a handful of parishioners, but he gets more activity doing tours and giving. But it's also financed by the neighboring mega church, which is run by in a really nice performance, Cedric the Entertainer.
Well, really? I really enjoyed Saved, which was pretty critical of Christian
this is,
culture.
This is not that satirical. There's a couple moments near the last third of the film where for some it got off the rails. It didn't for me.
Okay.
So anyway, I would think that Paul. So I guess I'm gunning for Paul Schrader and Spike Lee to get up there and just make a spectacle.
So
I'm all for that.
I don't know if we've gone in Best Director. Is that you want Spike then?
Black Klansman, Cold War, The Favorite, Roma, and Vice. Well, I guess by the best 10 list, I would be pushing for The Favorite, and it's one of Spike Lee's best films in recent years. Although I really loved Chirac, I don't mind Spike Lee going all over the place, and he does a little in this. You have it's a buddy cop film, and then you have the statements on race. You have a monologue by Harry Belafonte. It doesn't bring the film to a grinding halt. You have a dance number. You have modern footage from last year, just to make a point how things haven't changed. But I think it's a really tense, at times really funny investigative drama.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it. I think he probably might. I have a feeling he's not going to get director, and he's got a better chance with adapted screenplay.
Okay,
so
interesting. Who do you think for director then, Cuarón?
They'll probably give it to him.
Yeah.
So
I'm very upset Bradley Cooper wasn't nominated.
You are?
Yeah. I just think he did such an incredible job.
It's a huge task.
An incredible job for an actor turned director or just for any director?
Well, I mean, he's acting, he's directing, he did some of the screenplay, he's playing the guitar, he's singing. I mean, what else do you want the guy to do?
Some would say he really directs himself well.
Yeah.
He makes himself look. But I
think he knows himself. Yeah.
He knows himself. And I think that's probably one of the reasons why he's not on the top five.
Yeah.
But
it was a surprise to me to be sure.
What I appreciated about his character, and he kind of gets the juicier of the two roles.
Yeah.
And part of it is, as I've mentioned before, and yes, you can send your emails to me. All you have to do is be better than the Barbra Streisand version, and that film does that above and beyond. And I own the 70s A Star Is Born, folks.
Which is filled with, like, continuity errors and stuff like that.
What
it is?
Yeah, like they set a glass down. And
stuff like
scene,
that.
Yeah.
Never know.
Cooper adds more depth with his character. And this is the fourth time we've seen this story in history. And
it won't be the last.
It won't be the last. But the fact that his hearing and his alcoholism and his family and his relationship with his brother and his relationship with his father and, of course, the love and the competition with his new wife.
Yeah, wedding himself at the Royal Orbison.
Right, and then, of course, the ending, which he's much more of a tragic figure than, say, D-bag rock star from 40 years ago.
Right.
Or just too drinky guy from the first two films, which, anyway, and the third.
Yeah.
But he's more of a tragic figure this time around.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped resonate. That made it a little more resonate with me a little bit.
Even if he's not nominated, we're going to see a lot from him in the next couple years.
Well,
he's got
he possibly has an open a blank check to make his next film.
Oh, with Warner Brothers, certainly.
So, okay. That's happening Sunday night. So you know, get your pizza and popcorn and go check that out.
You had me at pizza.
I always like pizza. There's a few videos that I'm still catching up on because, as you mentioned, Jack, we had screeners, so you know the struggle
God
is
bless
real.
Screeners.
Yes, but
stop asking me for them, people. Like my name's on it.
Yeah. But so I've been catching up on stuff that's been sent to me. Thank you to the folks at Film Movement for moving this stuff along. Now, I didn't plan it this way. It just kind of happened in the streak of stuff that's been sent to me. So as far as content, yeah, here we go. Starting with a documentary called Antonio Lopez 1970, Sex, Fashion, and Disco, about one of the famous designers, artists from the late 60s and early 70s. A gentleman who breathed while drawing. He didn't record. He rendered as far as fashion. And I'm not the biggest fan of films about the fashion industry. I know there are people out there that love The Devil Wears Prada more than I do.
That gets me.
And I'll give an example. The September and of course, the Meryl Streep character is loosely based on the woman who is the subject of the September issue.
Is that Anna Wintour?
One of the most miserable human beings on the planet.
So
and it's funny because my wife will say about the Tarantino films and the drama, you know, the crime dramas, why do I want to spend 2 hours with these people? I understand that. Why do I want to spend 2 hours with a miserable fashion human being?
Because it's hilarious.
Is it?
Well, in the former case, because it's Tarantino. It's
But I mean, that's so anyway, she sees my argument, I see hers.
Uh-huh. Right.
So, because the clothes is the
right. Well, with and with Lopez, it was the lifestyle and the creating, and he also brought in, he had a way of just randomly picking women to be the models for his work, and they would all go on to bigger and better things. Jessica Lange was drawn by him, Jerry Hall, Patti Darneville, Grace Jones. I mean, these were some of his proteges. And it talks about his rise to fame in New York and his boyfriend and his collaborator, eventually moving to Paris and working with Chloe magazine to start that going. And anyway, as I wrote, it's real hit and miss about the fashion industry as far as people. I didn't have that issue with those type of characters here. It moves well, cool soundtrack. Yeah, lots of great fashion from that era. And it's a look where it's the lifestyle and the craft are meshed together. Huh. So that is out on video. I take notes, folks. There's a Dutch-Polish production called Nude Area. And when I watch a foreign film at times, I will look and see, well, how would Hollywood mess this up?
There's so many ways.
The other question is, could this be remade in the States? And Nude Area is an example of no. This is a 70-minute, almost silent film about two women having an affair. It's Lovers in Amsterdam.
Let's get Kevin Hart.
Wow. Because he's in every other thing.
Yeah,
but it goes to where how they met, how they got to know each other, the relationship itself. It opens with a really lovely detail of water hitting bodies, hitting flesh. And it looks great. It's intimate without being pornographic. And I think that's the nudity is a big deal.
It's a fine line to walk.
It's a fine line to walk. So people are uncomfortable with that around here. So, and it's a detail
on. Is it a grown-up movie or an adult movie?
It's a grown-up movie. No, it's not an adult. I've talked about borderline adult movies.
Such as?
Some of the nudie films of the 60s that Film Movement had put. If Film Movement has put it out on video, it's not. The Vice Squad isn't swinging by. I would say it's a film that's pays more attention to the detail of sight and sound over dialogue.
Okay.
So if you're in for a 70-minute visual experience about a subject matter that maybe makes people uncomfortable, here's your film.
I love feeling uncomfortable for 70 minutes straight.
Hello, Whitney.
Hi.
Also out on video is a documentary directed and starring the subject. It's the multimedia performance artist Narcissister/Organ Player is the name of the film. And this is somebody I didn't know, although there's a couple news clips, and I think I vaguely remember this happening. But she is a woman whose mom was a Sephardic Jew, dad was a black guy from Watts, and she wound up creating this mixed media performance art, and especially in this film, about her life. It's very sensual. It's very sexual. It's very uncomfortable at times. The film opens with her going down a pink canal and coming out the other end covered in white, and it's her recreating her own birth.
Oh.
Yeah. Wow. So we find out interviews with her, old interviews with her mother. We find out, and you never see the artist. She's always masked in one way, shape, or form. And that's a bit of an unsettling imagery. But early on, and they show it early, and then they, as they're going chronologically through her life, she gets a bit of a fame blip. She appeared on America's Got Talent. And then she made news, especially through TMZ. She was a quote-unquote date slash escort with Marilyn Manson for one weekend.
Oh.
But it's her telling her story, and it's interesting because she's obviously a very private person, but at the same time, it's a whole lot of look at me because we don't see her face, but she's willing to strip down physically and strip down emotionally to tell us a story, but we don't see her. And that's interesting. I think for a lot of artists, especially in the performance art, if you don't do performance art, and I don't, it's like, wow, that's a lot, and I don't know if I can do that. I don't know if anybody wants to see that. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of brassness to be able to, and there's a lot of her life story, like I said, recreated in performance art form. Visually, it reminded me of a lot of Almodóvar films or Fellini films of the 70s. If you know stuff like Satyricon and Armacord, or even Ken Russell, who's one of my favorite lunatic film directors. But it tells a story. It's just maybe between the nude dancing and the performance pieces might be a tad uncomfortable for some.
Sounds heavy.
It sounds fun. And then from Film Movement Classic from 1995, the documentary Frantz Fanon, Black Skin, White Mask, based on the book that was written in 1951 about one of the top voices of post-colonialism, a black man raised in the islands and then getting educated in France, so and became a theorist and part of the anti-colonial movement. So the fact that saw peasants in France and how different they were from the peasants in the islands, also the relationship between father, son, slave, and master, colonies, and the major countries. Wound up marrying a white French woman. There's a lot of balance and complexities between those two aspects of his world, and especially with the middle part of the globe in the 40s, 50s, and 60s.
So anti-imperialism, is that?
Anti-colonialism.
Are those the same thing?
Well, we'll have to ask a teacher.
I'll text mine right now.
There you go. So, but anyway, and there's a lot of talk as far as race, psychoanalysis, migration, liberation, as far as the relationships. Freud shows up, especially when it comes to plantation owner and plantation worker, slave. So anyway, that is finally out on video.
Freud always shows up when things are about to get weird.
That's right. It's one thing, but sometimes it's a mother.
Mm-hmm. I've never heard that.
I want to get to Dead People We Like because we never have time for Dead People We Don't Like.
Yeah. Dead People We Like. Freddie Mercury comes to
Well, no. Well, this started with originally we called it Hollywood Obits, and then Chris Lloyd referred to it as Dead People We Like.
On the spot. I remember.
Last week, Austrian actor Bruno Ganz passed away.
Yeah, Downfall.
Yes, and we're going to get to that in a little bit. I'm sorry, Swiss actor, not Austrian. My apologies. But this was a gentleman who established himself as one of the top actors in Europe back in going all the way back to the 60s. And then going through, I'm trying to think of, I believe the first thing, one of the first things he was noticed for, The American Friend from 1977. Boys from Brazil, 1978. And I just watched this with a group of guys. He was Jonathan Harker in Werner Herzog's Nosferatu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
What year was that?
1979. Yep, that was the year of you had a glut of vampire movies because you had Frank Langella's kind of disco Dracula as well as George Hamilton, The Love at First Bite that happened around
goodness.
That time.
Is that The Lost Boys that...
No, that's 87. That's much more feathered hair at that time and more
much more Sutherland.
Yeah, much more Sutherland. Let's see. And then the big thing he got known for after that was Wim Wenders' Wings of Desire from 1987. That was remade into a Nicolas Cage film nobody wanted. He plays an angel who wants to have a human life, and it's
so
a resource.
City of Angels with Meg Ryan.
I was going to say, I've heard this.
Yeah, but except it's...
A.K.A. Goo Goo Dolls, the movie.
Oh, boy.
Let's see. Other films of note. The Last Days of Shay Nu, Far Away So Close, which was the sequel to Wings of Desire. Bread and Tulips, Epstein's Night, Luther, the remake of The Manchurian Candidate, Downfall, which we'll get to in a moment.
Was that 04?
That was 04.
Sorry, I keep saying we're going to get to it, and I keep trying
to
stay.
No, it's fine.
There.
Dust of Time, The Reader, Unknown, of Women and Horses, The Counselor, Heidi. Yeah, he was in Heidi. The Party, in Times of Fading Light, Lars von Trier's The House That Jack Built, which came out last year, and he had just done a couple other projects. Now,
Heidi.
Like the Heidi?
Like Shirley Temple, like 11
Shirley
years
Temple,
old.
Yeah.
Like Pastor Prime.
Yeah, this was, where was that? More scrolling here.
That Ridley Scott's The Counselor in 2013?
Oh, yeah. Yes, it was. Yes. Yeah, that was.
That movie was terrible.
That's Cameron Diaz in a car.
Yeah, that movie's awful.
We're just going to leave that. However, and I remember explaining to folks younger than me, if you don't know Bruno Ganz, the next, and you should, I mentioned quite a few titles you can check out. The film Downfall, which is about the last days of Adolf Hitler, and they're in the bunker, and what happens is, and it's probably, many have said, the definitive performance, the definitive film about Hitler.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's
phenomenal.
He's crazed and defeated.
He's
and
totally losing it.
Losing it and vulnerable and all of these things rolled into one, anchored by Bruno Ganz. There is a scene in the film which has become an internet sensation.
Yep. I'm sure you've seen memes of it.
And I'm going to play it so you can come around and look at it. Ooh. But it's basically him in his office, surrounded by his generals and his staff, and how he has just been told that the war is lost. I'm sorry, spoiler alert on a history film about World War II. But I believe the first one of these that popped up, because they took the subtitles out and replaced them with, and it's become anything. The first time I saw it, and you're going to hear the German audio of this, because I can. I've checked the clips. But this is my tribute to Bruno Ganz. It's the scene of, and it's subtitled, which is great for radio, Hitler reacts to Hillary losing the election 2016. Here we go.
Dem Feind gelungen, die Front in breiter Formation zu durchbrechen. Im Süden hat der Gegner Zossen genommen und stößt auf Stahnsdorf vor. Der Feind operiert jetzt am nördlichen Stadtrand zwischen Frohnau und Pankow. Und im Osten ist der Feind bis zur Linie Lichtenberg-Marsdorf-Karlshorst gelangt.
Mit dem Angriff Steiners wird das alles in Ordnung kommen.
Mein Führer,
Steiner konnte nicht genügend Kräfte für einen Angriff massieren. Der Angriff Steiner ist nicht erfolgt.
Es bleiben im Raum Keitel, Jodl, Krebs und Burgdorf. Das war ein Befehl! Der Angriff Steiners war ein Befehl! Wer schickt Sie?
Das hier ist Wagen! Sie meinen Befehl zu widersetzen! Weit ist das einfach gekommen. Der Militär hat mich verlogen.
Jeder hat mich verlogen, sogar die SS. Die gesamte Generalität ist nichts weiter als ein Haufen niederträchtiger, treuloser Feiglinge.
Mein Führer, ich kann nicht zulassen, dass die Soldaten, die für Sie verbringen...
Bist das Feiglinge, Verräter, Versager?
Mein Führer, was Sie da sagen, ist ungeheuerlich.
Die Generalität ist das Geschmolz des deutschen Volkes. Sie ist ohne Ehre. Sie nennen sich Generale, weil Sie Jahre auf Militärakademien zugebracht haben, nur um zu lernen, wie man Messer und Gabel hält.
Jahrelang hat das Militär meine Aktionen nur behindert. Es hat mir jeden nur erfüllten
Widerstand in den Weg gelegt. Ich hätte gut daran getan.
und darin alle höheren Offiziere registrieren zu lassen, wie Stalin! Ich war nie auf einer Akademie. Und doch habe ich allein auf mich gestellt, ganz Europa erobert. Verräter! Von allem Anfang an bin ich so verraten und betrogen worden. Es wurde ein ungeheurer Verrat geübt am deutschen Volke. Aber alle diese Verräter werden bezahlen. Mit ihrem eigenen Blut werden sie bezahlen. Sie werden es saufen in ihrem eigenen Blut.
Bitte gerne. Jetzt beruhig dich doch.
Meine Befehle sind in den Wind gesprochen. Es ist unmöglich, unter diesen Umständen zu führen. Es ist aus. Der Krieg ist verloren. Aber wenn Sie, meine Herren, glauben, dass ich deswegen Berlin verlasse, irren Sie sich gewaltig. Eher jage ich mir eine Kugel durch den Kopf. Tun Sie, was Sie wollen.
Thank you, Bruno Ganz.
That was incredible.
Yeah, we watched the when Hillary lost the election. Another one I saw was another favorite of mine was Hitler Watches the Room, which is really good. Although my favorite, it's really well that one that clip it's spliced with dialogue from the film, and you see him getting angrier and angrier.
Oh, hi, Mark.
So, yeah, but the current favorite, and it happened right after Ganz died. Somebody did a clip of. Hitler declaring that Bruno Ganz is the perfect actor to play him, and one of the guys goes, "Mein Führer, Bruno Ganz died." It was actually a really lovely online tribute to Bruno Ganz.
Oh, that's perfect.
So salute, Bruno. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, that's a wonderful movie.
And yeah, it's a great film in and of itself, yeah. And on top of it, it's going to be remembered in pop culture online, at least online pop culture world, because of that scene.
It's almost like the Willy Wonka meme where he's like this.
Yes, where he's leaning and has a moment. So, So, yeah, go check that out. Plus, I haven't played a foreign film clip on the show in a long time. I used to do that, especially with trailers. The other one of offbeat films that you should check out, of course, Peter Tork, one of the members of the Monkees, passed away at the age of 77.
No! Yep. We're down to two Monkees.
We are down to two.
And two Beatles.
So Mickey and Mike are still with us. But, of course... Tork was one of those that could actually play his instruments to begin with and was frustrated at the concept of the show and then wanted to record it. And they wound up doing that. Frank Conniff of Mystery Science Theater fame wrote, and I'm paraphrasing, but he had a great tweet about how, it was supposed to be just a Beatles knockoff show, and it's actually been immortalized. And actually, even when they started playing their instruments, put out some really solid pop music that's being played to this day.
In my car, in my earbuds.
Yeah.
All the time.
There you go. Well, if you've never seen, this is your assignment, look for the psychedelic musical Head from 1968, starring the Monkees, directed by Bob Rafelson, co-written by Bob Rafelson and Jack Nicholson.
Is that a spoof of like Hair or something?
This was before Hair.
Okay.
Basically, as described, the Monkees are tossed into a psychedelic, surrealist, plotless, circular bit of fun fluff.
Awesome.
And of course, let's put it this way. Fans of the TV show were expecting a musical version of the TV show. They didn't get that. Victor Mature shows up, Annette Funicello, Timothy Carey, Vito Scotti. It's a something because they wanted something that was truly theirs, because the series was supposed to be just a created fictional band, and the musical is way more than that.
Speaking of dead people, we like Annette Funicello.
Yes.
I would watch anything with her in it.
Well, I think we did a lot of those. Hi, Frankie. Anyway, so yeah, there you go. So thanks, Peter Tork. And if you're listening, I actually have Peter Tork singing Albert King's Crosscut Saw, which I'm going to play on the Blue Show this weekend. So, all right. Jack.
Sir.
I have your IMDb page up.
Okay.
You can answer and not answer, really. See if you have any any fun stories behind the scenes that you are allowed to actually share.
He does. I've heard them.
Well,
but this was not on record.
Which
so.
One? Walken.
That's a good one.
Well,
okay. I was thinking of Russell.
Well, so. Russell, I definitely can't tell on air here.
That's Brand X with Russell Brand,
yeah.
Which you were a production assistant for 7 episodes.
I think it only lasted.
I'm just reading what's on the screen.
Well, no, I was a personal assistant to Russell for 8.5 months shortly after his breakup with Katy Perry.
Ooh.
And I could go on and on, but I won't. Whitney's heard
just
him.
Just get him drunk. That's the secret to
well, we don't
story.
Do that here at Film Sociology, unless a brewery sponsors the program. Anyway, no,
I worked. I worked as an assistant before that to Colin Farrell on a movie called 7 Psychopaths,
yes.
Which was a
yep.
Martin McDonagh film. If you've ever seen In Bruges,
yeah.
it's the guy who did that.
Of
and
course.
7 Psychopaths is hysterical in its own right. And it never really kind of found an audience, which
it felt like
irritates me because
well,
it's hysterical.
On paper, I think it felt like it was somebody was trying to bring back the Tarantino knockoff films of the 90s.
Maybe so.
Okay.
But anyway, so I worked for Colin on that, just kind of picking him up in the morning, driving him to set. And
now, he had already kind of settled down?
Yes.
Okay.
He was totally clean and sober and, you know, was...
He would be fighting with Kirk Douglas for your affections, dear.
Aww,
at one time.
Thank you so much.
Oh, I know so.
Here, Flip.
Colin, wonderful guy. I
cool.
love him. So nice, so generous, so gracious. Would invite me into his home. And,
so Irish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He called me Jacker.
Capital I.
And so the movie starred Colin and Chris Walken and Sam Rockwell, who's hysterical.
Yep, Tom Waits is in it. Woody Harrelson.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it was Colin's third or fourth day on the movie, and it was Walken's first.
Oh, boy.
And they had never met each other.
Oh, God.
And so they are rehearsing the scene that takes place like inside a house. They're just like sitting on a couch or something. And we're all over, you know, the assistants, the director and the writer, everybody. We're all over in what they call Video Village. So like the monitors are there and you're watching what's about to be filmed. And so they're rolling sound. They're not recording anything, but we have just like this. We have headphones on and we can hear what they're saying. And at some point Walken is talking to Colin. He goes, "You know, as for me, I gotta have sex every day or I'll get sick and die." And we all just start like pulling our headphones off, like looking at each other, like, "Did you just hear what Walken said?" And Colin is dying laughing. And Walken is just stone faced.
Oh,
like
yeah.
He was telling the truth. Like, I really, that is my life.
Is he married?
I think so.
Okay.
As weird as you'd expect. He showed up in L.A. with, like, this green Goodwill duffel bag that had his name, Walken, written in a Sharpie.
Probably from his younger days.
Yeah,
still.
And, you know, strange guy, nice guy, and just a pro, just total pro.
Cool.
Shows up, does his work.
You
doesn't
were,
hold back.
Yeah.
No. Well, shared sound advice with Colin Farrell. That's pretty
mm-hmm.
good. You were listed as a staff assistant on Best Picture winner Argo.
Yes. So that was one of my most fun experiences. It was a lot of work. But I knew we were working on something really special when we did it. So I was kind of the office production assistant, so would take care of things around the office, would occasionally often run to set, you know, deliver stuff that needed
right.
to be done. But before we started filming, Ben Affleck, who was the director, wanted all of the actors who played the so-called hostages
mm-hmm.
to get to know each other and to kind of develop a rapport with one another. So he had them all stay together in the house that they filmed the Iran scenes in.
Sure.
And they could not have their cell phones. They could not have access to TV.
Okay.
And Ben printed out, like, lists of DVDs that he wanted me to get. So, like, Ordinary People was one of them with Timothy Hutton and, like, 3 Days of the Condor.
So from the era?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, like, they could only have records from that era. And I remember one of them was the Aerosmith No Surprise album, which in the trailer they used the song Dream On.
Okay.
So it was only like 70s music, 70s
sure.
movies that they could watch. And every day I'd show up and they'd be like, "Did you bring us tequila?" And they
70s
since,
tequila.
Yeah. And one of those guys was his name's Scoot McNairy. He's gone on to do a lot of really good work, and he's actually in True Detective right now.
Ah, okay.
With Marshall Ali, and he's done a great job. So, and then that went on to win Best Picture, and
you're involved in the Best Picture
yeah,
winner.
Yeah, super happy. And I liked working for Affleck. Super nice guy, hard worker, and you know.
I remember you texting me from L.A. saying you need to watch Argo, and I was like, okay, tell me why. You said, you're my friend. You owe this to me. I worked really hard on this.
That's a great example. It has the same – I put it in the same category as Apollo 13 where, you know, if you do enough research – and I remember when this happened.
Do you?
But, you know, it's still tense. It's still tense when you're in the airport.
Yeah.
You know how it ends, but it's still well enough of a well enough film that you get sucked into it.
We talked about biopics having to kind of amp up the tension and everything.
Yeah.
Because I remember I also picked up the actual people who were the hostages because Ben wanted them to visit set and show them around or whatever. And I was like, hey, so I was reading the script. Do they ever like chase you down the runway? And they're like, so, sorry to spoil that for you.
Well, we were mentioning earlier about you know his biopics.
Yeah, exactly.
Sort of, so.
But that was a lot of fun. And,
cool.
You know, Hollywood was a weird place.
It's all right.
Holly weird.
Well, you're with us now. It's
yeah,
right.
I kind of ran out
all
of
over
dad.
Now,
so ran out of dad's money to spend.
You all right? I won't dig deep, but I know you. As you said, you were a production. You worked on Brand X with Russell Brand.
Mm-hmm.
The strangest thing that you could share with us that you had to get for him.
Whitney knows.
I sure do.
I can't. I'm not going to say.
Okay.
The
all answer. Right.
But I will say
the third weirdest thing.
Okay. He had a very specific diet.
Of course.
He was very kind of into natural foods and holistic type stuff like that. But occasionally he would just splurge.
Cheat day.
on Indian food.
Sure.
And it could only be from this one place in L.A.
Okay.
That was like, because I lived like near Santa Monica, and this place was in like the heart of Hollywood, and it was so far away.
But at least the traffic's not too bad there,
yeah,
so that you've got
just,
that on your side.
You can just breeze
wow,
right
thanks,
over
Whitney.
There.
You're
and this was, you know, this was before Uber Eats or DoorDash, so that mm-hmm. I was kind of
you were DoorDash.
I was DoorDash before DoorDash, cool. So that would be
okay.
Something where it's like. Friday night at 6:30 and
gosh.
Traffic's horrid.
And he wonders where you
and
are.
He, yeah, he's like, Chuck, come on, man. I need my food, mate.
Your impression is spot on, dude.
That's fun.
Yeah. Well, you spend enough time with him.
Yeah.
But
any Russell story is good because
yeah.
of the accent.
And, you know, I still love Russell. I think he's super intellectual, super intelligent.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think he never really wanted the Hollywood spotlight, I don't think. I think he's much more at home back in London. Kind of doing his podcast or his YouTube thing and
organizing,
and doing his stand up.
Yeah, it's
and
but
he's
it's
a dad now.
It's stand up, but it's what? Also got some history and it's almost a stand up meets
so,
TED Talks kind of thing.
He's so well read,
yeah.
And he's so intelligent.
Who did he have a kid with? A celebrity?
No,
with a lady.
Oh, is that how that happens?
I think that's how that works.
Okay,
yeah.
But I don't know who she was, but they're married.
There you go.
And
another one, calm down.
Yeah, exactly.
You are listed as a production secretary on The Gambler from 2014.
Yes. A movie that did not turn out as great as we all wanted it to.
Okay.
You know, we had Wahlberg, and we had what I thought was a great script by Bill Monahan, who wrote The Departed.
Yeah.
So we were hoping to kind of create something like The Departed, and it just kind of didn't work out. But Wahlberg was a great guy. He would show up to the office and he had like an igloo cooler packed with like six meals. Like he had to eat every
him and his meal prep
every 2 hours or something like that, and it was all like protein.
Well, I guess when you work with Peter Berg enough, you have to just be in constant training.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly. And he showed up the first day. He was wearing like this big neck brace. I was like, dude, what happened? He's like, I messed it up in Hong Kong on Transformers. Say hi to your mother for me.
Thank you. Okay, I see it's uncredited, but I don't care. I'm still going to bring it up because it's IMDb. Steve-O in Seeking a Friend for the End of the World.
Yeah, I don't know why that's uncredited. That's like a totally legit, like, probably one of my
biggest
things.
You're not playing the Steve-O, right?
No,
nothing's being inserted or whatever. So
this was...
Hold up. Do you edit your own IMBD?
I did when I haven't in years.
Where's your headshot?
Years.
Okay.
Does it not have a headshot?
No.
You know
a photographer.
No.
I need a headshot.
Wow, look, we got another deal made here. Mm-hmm. Look, witness this. Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, witness photography.
Here to serve.
Yeah, so that was a movie I was actually working in the office, and the writer and director, Laureen Scafaria, who's so great, she was like, hey, you'd actually be perfect for this role. And I was like, oh, tell me a bit more about it. She's like, well, it's just kind of a dumb jock type idiot. And I'm like, okay, that's...
Really. Typecasting.
So she was so nice, though. But, so it's the end of the world, and Steve Carell and Keira Knightley's character go into this. It was supposed to be a TGI Fridays, but copyright stuff. They had to
tchotchkes.
Yeah, exactly. They had to call it Frenzies.
Lots of flair.
But it was totally like Office Space.
And if you see Ryan Reynolds, don't eat.
Yeah, exactly. So I play a waiter named Steve-O and TJ Miller, who, you know, from Deadpool and Silicon Valley and all sorts of stuff. He's like stoned out of his mind as the, as the head reception or what's it called, head server. And so he's leading Steve Carell and Keira Knightley to their table, and he passes me. And he goes, "Hey, Steve-O!" And he smacks me on the butt, and I turn around, and it's probably my most FaceTimey role out of my LA days.
Okay,
but that was a fun movie, and Steve Carell, another one of the really good guys out there, just really solid guy.
2009, you played a German soldier in Spoils of War.
Yeah, that goes back to, I kept kind of getting, anytime there was like a Nazi thing.
You didn't know you were going to get random rolled here at Film
Society. Yeah, I know. Anytime there was a Nazi role, I don't know if it's the blue eyes or kind of the blonde
hair. The master look.
Yeah.
It's that evil gaze that you have when you want to employ it.
Yeah. So that one was...
it's funny, I have Ralph Fiennes' gut from Schindler's List over here, so...
No. That was one. I remember we were filming it in California, and it was like a snowy type.
The Germany of the West Coast.
Yeah, exactly. But I was like, I didn't know there was snow in California.
You know, now that you mentioned the Nazi thing, okay, so I've known Jack since I was in second grade and he was in kindergarten. And he's the youngest of three brothers, and I just remember thinking about him when he was in kindergarten. Like, of these three, he looks like the one that the parents genetically engineered to look like perfect.
Oh, so you're the boy from Brazil.
Yeah.
Tiny, blonde, blue
eyes, candidate.
Face of an angel. So, like, yeah, the Nazi thing all makes sense because, you know, there's that genetic engineering project.
Yeah.
So
no,
maybe...
I promise I'm not a Nazi. just clarifying.
You made the transition before that. First, you were a Nazi, and then before that, you were a knight in Bob Funk.
Yeah, that was
also uncredited for some reason.
Yeah, that was like
knight number one.
That was the
first
thing.
Did you have the jerseys with the numbers on the back?
No, this was that was a goofy movie. That was like the first thing I did when I got out there, and it had this
It even has the video, the cover of the DVD cover. It looks like the crazy straight to video. Kind
of
look
it?
To
it.
Oh
yeah, it had an interesting
Rachel Lee Cook.
She's all that.
Yep.
Oh, she's so cute.
Josie and the Pussycats.
Eddie Jimison, who is kind of the nerdy guy in the Ocean's trilogy.
Oh, okay.
The Radio Shack, they call them. The main actor was great. He the name is escaping me. Michael Laden Campbell.
But you have leading lady and leading man side by side, arms crossed, and then a woman's lower half at the bottom of the box.
Yep.
So,
the writing director was Craig Carlisle, who's actually from Indiana, and he may be living here. I'm not sure. We kind of lost track of each other after a while. I think he went back to Indiana before I did, but. Yeah, so that was one of the first things I did out there. And speaking of Office Space, you know who's in that movie was Milton himself. Stephen Root.
Nice.
Was in Bob Funk.
The Red Stapler guy?
The Red Stapler guy.
Oh, the Stephen Root. Hall of Fame. That guy.
Dodgeball Stephen Root.
Okay, so I'm
going to set the building on fire.
Did you say hi to him?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Cool?
Yeah, he's cool.
Oh my God.
He seems like he's one of those. He's that guy that, you know, and Gary Cole has also told the story. I know there's like three oral histories about the 20th anniversary of Office Space.
Right.
That
I just
came
read
out.
One too.
Right.
Yeah.
But you see, he's one of those that guys would just yell lines at him from across the street.
Well, Stephen Root was kind of the origin of Office Space.
Yeah.
Like, wasn't it a Mike Judge, like,
short
film called
that were
Milton?
On SNL, yeah.
And that eventually turned into Office Space. I remember when they were making Office Space, they were like, okay, we need a big name. Let's get Matt Damon.
Yeah.
Can you see Matt Damon as
But there was
Peter?
The one his salary would have been the entire budget, I believe, is what Mike Judge said.
Mm-hmm.
But there was because everybody and there's a great story with that guys and that ladies is where you discovered them first. For me it was news radio.
Oh yeah.
For and Gary Cole.
For Stephen Root.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
right, exactly. So it was one of those you see them, and then you see them elsewhere, right. And you like them, and then there's that wonderful moment when you commit their name to memory. You're like, you graduated from that guy to Stephen Root.
Yeah.
But I remember, I do remember, I think Office Space was the next one. Oh, my God, that's the dude from News Radio.
Yeah,
so.
I know. And then he shows up in Dodgeball. And
and then the Coens come a-calling. So that's good. That's good to have on
speed dial. Oh, brother, where art thou?
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, you're listed as a suit in Dirty Chat, which was a TV movie, so it can't be that dirty.
No, it was, I think that was a pilot, like a web pilot that never turned into anything.
Okay. And then...
God, I haven't looked at my IMDb in a while.
That's why I'm doing this. 2008, you were Officer Jameson in 12.
Yes. Again, kind of new people from Bob Funk that went to go work on that. And they wanted it to kind of be like a Friday the 13th Halloween type horror movie.
Oh, so the number.
Yeah. But all I remember about that movie was the director was Mike Nichols.
Not Mike Nichols.
Different. From Mike the Graduate.
It's N-I-C-K-L-E-S.
Yes. And if you
Did you hear it first, Mike Nichols? And
thought,
oh, my God.
God, I've hit the big time. This is great.
That's how he gets people.
But no, this was a Mike Nichols who played Jim Morrison in Wayne's World 2.
Oh my God. I love. Okay, yeah.
See, you got there, yep, there it is.
Okay.
I just pulled
Fan
up his
girl.
Page. So.
If you book them,
they will
come.
Come.
Yeah. And follow he still kind of looks like that. Like
and he directed something last year. So.
Hey, good for him.
Yeah.
Man. Follow the Weird Naked Indian. Uh-huh. That's great.
God, I love that.
Are you going to get your Sports Illustrated football film?
And then finally, you have listed as a construction assistant on X-Men First Class.
Yes. So that was when I kind of realized, like, all right, acting is really tough. I need a job. So I got behind the camera, and that one was fun because they had filmed a lot of it in Georgia and London, and they were so behind schedule.
Of course.
And they were so totally effed. And the budget was blown. Nobody was having any fun.
Aww.
The director was Matthew Vaughn, who's a great director. Mm-hmm. And the movie turned out fine, but like at the time...
It was stress-city.
At the time, we were like, I don't know what's going to happen with this. This is going to be a disaster. But Jennifer Lawrence was in it.
Yep.
And she Mystique? Was so sweet.
Mystique?
Yeah, yep. She was Mystique. Okay. So she'd have to show up at like 4 a.m. and start getting painted blue.
Ooh.
And I remember the
steady winning.
I became friendly with some of the makeup girls who like worked on her, and they're like, "Yeah, she just comes in, drops her robe, and gets naked." And I was like,
"That's what you
Can
have to
I
do."
Come in
Thanks.
Sorry.
No, that's fine.
Went overboard.
Fine.
Me too.
No, that's fine.
Me too.
But that was fun because it turned
out Rose Byrne and Janie Rae Jones.
Well, we had Rose Byrne come and do some pickup shots, and I drove her around L.A. and there were bridesmaids. Billboards
really?
Up there.
Oh,
around.
Right.
And I was like, oh, this looks really cool. She's like, yeah, I just don't know. We'll see.
That was the first R-rated film my daughter watched.
Was it?
Yes. Not a bad first choice. That's
a great one. Yeah.
I love it, but I also hate it because it gave us Paul Feig.
Oh.
Wow.
Slam.
Feig, if you're listening to this, I hate you.
All right. We're going to. Okay. You doing all right?
Give me a moment.
Okay. Jack, thank you for letting me run through your IMDb.
Yeah,
you've got a random role.
Yeah.
So
well, the one last, that's not the last... on there and is
okay.
super uncredited.
Please do.
Was before I even moved to L.A. We filmed it at Navy Pier in Chicago, and it was The Dark Knight.
Wow.
And it was a scene where the Joker has kind of made his threats on the city, and they're supposed to be evacuating everybody.
Yep.
And you can see me clear as day when they're letting these convicts on one of the boats instead of like us, civilians. And you hear this guy go, "Hey, that's not right. We should be on that boat." And I'm right there, John.
Nice.
And it was awesome. I mean, I never got to see Heath or Christian Bale or anything, but I got to see Christopher Nolan. And he was wearing like a full 3-piece suit.
While directing?
In the middle of July
he's,
in Chicago.
He's Lawrence.
Yeah. And he's got like the... monitor around his neck.
Of course he does.
Yeah, that guy's big time.
My buddy Paul Perillo is in The Dark Knight.
Is he?
He is one of Eric Roberts' bodyguards.
Okay.
And
Sal Maroni's henchman.
Yeah, one of Maroni's henchmen. Big guy. And he was a blues. I lived in the Chicago suburbs before living here. And
okay.
Paul was a big blues fan. Got to know him. He had a show in Chicago for
a
while.
Chicago is the blues.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And Eric Roberts kind of turned and looked at him apparently and just said, "Man, you look mean." And Paul was as big a teddy bear as there ever was.
Yeah.
Paul also learned about shooting on location because there's a restaurant scene. And apparently Paul accidentally dinked a fork to the plate and blew everybody's eardrums out.
And
Mr. Nolan, of course, went, "Paul, please don't do that." And
oh, wow.
Yeah. So he got a hard lesson there. And I think there's one great shot in particular when Eric Roberts, who's already in a cast after getting dropped off the balcony from Batman,
uh-huh.
and he exits a scene with a walker and a cane, and Paul's in the background.
Okay.
So, that was when Gotham City was Chicago, not Pittsburgh.
Yeah, that movie is in my top five.
Well, wow. Of course.
It's in my top five favorite ever.
Wow.
I was an extra at the end of Die Hard 2.
You were?
I was, which they shot in, because at the very, very
Rennie
end.
Rennie Harlan?
Rennie Harlan. I took a direct order from Mr. Harlan.
Yeah,
so,
Christmas movies are extra special to Matt and I because we both were born 6 days before Christmas.
That's right.
Is that right?
We're presents.
Yes, we were.
That's right. So,
is Die Hard 2 Die Harder?
Die Harder. They shot the ending in Alpena, Michigan, on an Air Force base because they needed.
Was it supposed to be DC? Denver.
Well, yeah, it was supposed to be DC. They were shooting in Denver and it got too warm. So they needed an airport that was big enough for a DC-9 and no nighttime traffic. So the Air Force Base in Alpena, Michigan. I was living in Flint at the time. And they needed extras, so my buddy Jason Beckman and I went up. We were the first two guys in line. They needed, I think, 500 extras and 200 extras, and like 5,000 people showed up.
Wow!
So if you press the wonder of the pause button, because the plane has landed, and you're going down. I got to go down the emergency chute a couple of times. My buddy bumped into Bruce Willis on a shot. I got to meet Bonnie Bedelia and William Atherton on the plane. And then
William Atherton.
Well, not well, but you know, of course, Hall of Fame.
Walter Peck.
Yeah, Hall of Fame. That guy ate all. I would say Ben. Nice.
There's the Dark Knight.
Nice. Ben Mendelsohn's inspiration for Ready Player One is William Atherton and some other guys from the 80s.
Okay.
I think. But
was he the bad guy in Weird Science?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, he was.
So if I wanted to look for you, what was your hair like back then?
Short. In fact, the moment you see me three times, well, there's one time I'm running behind the dude on the golf cart. And Rennie Harlan just said, "You go that way." And I'm like, "Yes, sir, Mr. Harlan." And I'm in black suspenders, gray striped shirt, dark gray pants, much shorter hair.
Any facial hair?
No, none.
Wow, I won't know who I'm looking at.
That's why I'm telling you this.
Okay.
And then at it's the very last moment where Dennis Franz is the cop and he tears up Bruce Willis's parking ticket. I'm behind Bruce and Bonnie, and I'm standing over a guy who's on a stretcher.
Okay, wow. I'm going to go.
So two nights.
Sound easy to find.
Checks, you know, my checks cleared. We shot at night. I had like five layers of clothes on under that and, had a ball.
How cold was it?
And the thing was, you couldn't wear, because you were going down the emergency chute, you couldn't wear your coat and you couldn't wear shoes.
Right.
So the first night was really bad.
Wow.
Second night, we went to daytime, we went to a ski shop. I had black running tights, sweatpants, jeans under my pants.
Oh, yeah.
Two T-shirts. A first dress shirt and then the dress shirt that you see.
Wow.
And my buddy Jason snuck a bottle of tequila on the set, and in between takes, we would like sneak in the ambulance and have a couple.
There you go.
The smartest one on the cast.
No.
Probably better than the Flint water back then, too.
Flint water was okay then. I got out while the getting was good.
Okay, good, good.
All right. While we are... Jack, where can folks find you on social media?
I have an Instagram, JackStory16, and it's usually just pictures of my parents' dog. But I also do renovations around Indianapolis.
Okay.
I flip homes, and so a lot of it's that. But, I'm on that a lot more on my Facebook. I think I'm close to getting rid of my Facebook.
I want you to know, you've joined, because I've done the IMDb run with two other folks. I've did it with Fred the Hammer Williamson and with Doug Jones.
Like from Doug, Hellboy,
yes.
Doug Jones?
Yes. Oh, wow. Also fellow Ball State graduate, Doug Jones.
Is he?
So, oh, yes. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so
he's pretty versatile.
He's pretty flexible.
What was he just in that I saw?
Star Trek?
No.
Hocus Pocus 20th anniversary?
Hang on.
Well, while you're doing that,
yeah, change the subject.
Whitney,
yeah.
Tell folks about your photography as well.
I am family lifestyle, wedding and real estate photographer, so a nice healthy mix. Almost anything that people want photographed, I can do it within reason. So, yeah, I don't have a social media presence. The webpage has been under construction for about 3 years. So,
And I have to say, you're a really good sport because I know one of the, yes. Oh, well, first off, you're on this show, but and of course you're available for Princess Detail.
I sure am, yeah.
Not just the blonde princesses, too. She does Ariel with the red wig.
I was Ariel on Thanksgiving.
But there was a griping moment for somebody online about Indianapolis's culture, and they were talking about fake food and fake this, and then there was a picture of you with a girl on the square, and they wrote fake princess.
That was so funny, and so many people thought that was like a slam on me, and I was like,
No.
The person
I believe was frustrated about other things and used you as an example, but you took it in stride.
Oh, I loved it because it's like a, hey, like, it's like a little
no
kid that's like, you're not
press.
Real. So like an adult being like, look, it's not the real Cinderella. I got the humor. I think that it wasn't.
I had a teaching job at a dance studio in Fishers many moons ago, and I got to play Santa Claus.
When we walked in,
I had met you. She goes, he kind of looks like Santa Claus.
Yeah. I had you know the outfit of the beard and everything. I didn't have the red pants, so I was in my jeans, and so I was in the dance studio.
Casual Friday Santa.
Yeah, that's thank you at the North Pole, and
you weren't like a Billy Bob Thornton Santa.
No, I was not that. No, where's your black Laura Graham wig? Anyway, that's Mrs. Sosie's job, but or Christina Hendricks in the sequel, but no, that moment with the kids was so much fun, and even the older ones when you look and they're kind of cocking their head, and I would just say, "Come on, man, not today, not today." Okay, just roll with it and deal with it elsewhere.
Right. So what's the funniest kid or thing that a kid asked for when you were Santa?
Oh, I don't remember.
I keep a record.
Do you
in my
really?
Head of the funny stuff
okay,
that
what's,
the kids say?
What funny things have you been asked?
Oh,
from kids?
My gosh. Okay, by far and away were the two little girls who. So first of all, I'm Ariel at a party, and the kids are at the age where they, you know, they're very smart, but they really think that you're real. So I told them that I didn't know anything about human food, so they were feeding me stuff from the buffet. Like, this is cheese. You might like this, you know.
They were feeding you shrimp.
They were feeding me fruit, and I just had to act interested, and I was like. It was like, wow, I'm really selling this. So I asked them for some love advice since they were pretty engaging.
Oh, my.
And the funniest thing I've ever heard the kids say was like, I think that you maybe should just, because I was like, I'm in love with a human. I'm not sure what to do. You know, I'm a mermaid. How do I go about this? She said, whoa, whoa, whoa. First off, you have to start with hi. And I said, I was like, okay, good thought.
Wow.
What else do you think? And the other one said, without missing a beat, I think maybe you shouldn't tell him that you're a mermaid. Maybe wait until you're married, because he might not like that.
He's into it. Kind of,
does that tell us more about the childhood's home, maybe, than the person itself?
Uh-huh. Yep. So I thought that was pretty cute.
See, that's like when, if you ever buy flowers at a non-florist, ladies and gentlemen, And sometimes a gas station, it happens, and sometimes it's a grocery store, and the person checking you out goes, uh-oh.
Right.
And I always respond with, we're fine. Are you okay? Because I think you just told more about your life history than mine. Mm-hmm. Were you wronged? Did you always associate flowers with an apology, a screw up? Are you okay? Do you want one? Yeah, that cracks me up all the time.
That's like the people that tease you when you're directed by Emma. Like, oh, you have to take direction.
I mentioned it. Yeah, people have to do what your kid says. And I went, this is not some parental child power play. I'm being directed by my kid, not yours. I think you just told me about how your parent-child relationship are more than anything else.
Yeah.
Yeesh.
Very revealing.
Nice. Well, guys.
It was Doug Jones, Shape of Water.
Shape of Water, Doug Jones, yes. So, ladies and gentlemen, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz.
has spoken.
Whitney, Jack, thanks for hanging out.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a lot of fun.
Have a fun Oscar weekend. Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!